And my guest this morning is Dar Williams. Good morning, Dar.
Good morning.
I'm glad to have you here in the WNRN studios. You've visited us several times since I've been here, but this is the first time you've been my guest here.
That's right.
Let's talk a little bit about the new CD, The Promised Land, kind of a collection of stories about relationships and all sorts of relationships. But we were talking earlier about the buzzer song. Why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, this particular psychological experiment that kind of prompted this song?
That's right. I mean, a lot of the relationships on this record are people's relationship to their place in time and history. Like, it's with each other, but it's also, you know, kind of like the tight little moral navigations they have to make. And this one it's probably the centerpiece of the album. And actually, the keyboardist, Laura Meyer Atkin, he's from Australia on this album. She said, this woman is the linchpin of this. It's all about her. And so this woman in Buzzer is a person who takes part in of the famous Stanley Milgram obedience to authority experiments in the early 60s, which were the experiment was to bring people off the street and to test the effects of punishment on learning. So one person was the control, and they would be administering shocks to a person who was learning a list of words, and the person who was learning a list of words would get them wrong, and you'd have to administer a shock. So, of course, as it turned out, the person who was learning was actually an actor. The person who was the control person was the person being tested to see how far they would go to hurt a person. And the answer was they went very far. And I think when the song really started was when I found out that they had redone the experiment in 2005, and they had the same results. And, you know, for you and I, who are a little bit obsessed with this experiment, and, you know, I think about it, you know, every day, I was surprised that more people hadn't heard of it and didn't know what they were walking into. And then I was also surprised that it had the same results in 2005. So the song actually came out of asking different questions. Instead of like, would I do it? Would I do it? You know, when I administer the shocks, it was more like, why would I do it? What set of circumstances would it be? You know, what would it be like to be living in New Haven and walking into Yale University and having people tell me if I don't do what they tell me to, I'm going to ruin their experiment or not get my money or those things? You know, what, I don't know, it became a more interesting question, a more compassionate set of questions as opposed to, you know, me, me, me. So that's the song. You want me to play it?
Yeah, because obviously, as you always do in many of your songs, you ask a lot of questions about, you know, humanity on some level, and you ask a lot of good questions in this song. So
I hope so. Yeah, I mean, I tried to. It flipped for me from some of the conventional questions. All right, so this is called Buzzer.
Sitting with a number 8 platter at the restaurant, $4.29 for almost anything I want. Add it up, it's cheaper than the stuff I make myself. I get by, I never needed anybody's help. And I tore out an ad, and they told me that I would press the buzzer, would press the buzzer. At the graduate lab, there were doers and devs. I pressed the buzzer, I pressed the buzzer. Walk a dog, pay every bill. Feeling sorry for this guy that I pressed a shock. He gets the answers wrong, I have to up the watts. And he begged me to stop, but they told me to go. I pressed the buzzer, I pressed the buzzer. So get out of my head, just give me my line. I pressed the buzzer, I pressed the buzzer. Ride the circle off of the highway, spiral into the driveway. In the maze of old prefabs, they'll be waiting at the lab. They brought me back to the lab to discuss the test. I put my earring things until my heels wore a dress. Right away I knew it was like a failed quiz. The man said, do you know what a fascist is? I said, yes, when you do things you're not proud of, but you're scraping by taking orders from above. I get it now, I'm the face and the cause of war. We don't have to blame white-coated men anymore. When I knew it was wrong, I played it just like a game. I pressed the buzzer, I pressed the buzzer. Here's your 70 bucks, now everything's changed. I pressed the buzzer, I pressed the buzzer. But tell me where are your stocks, would you do this again? I pressed the buzzer. And tell me who made your clothes, was it children or men? I pressed the buzzer. Ride the circle off of the highway, spiral into the driveway. In the maze of all prefabs, they'll be waiting.
WNRN. My guest this morning is Dar Williams. We're talking about the new album, Promised Land, came out in September, and we're awfully glad to have Dar Williams back in the WNRN studios again. This album, as we said earlier, was talking about all sorts of relationships. You know, It's All Right is one, you know, Book of Love, another. Easy Way, I think of that also because I'm in the middle of reading your book, Amelie, talking about, you know, good-spirited kid who just finds herself in a lot of bad situations and what happens. And kind of the Easy Way just kind of talks about, like, being a good person and, you know, could you please treat me like a good person? It's kind of interesting, where did that come from? I mean, it sounds like the song is kind of talking about a breakup of sorts.
Yeah, well, it's kind of retrospective. I was just thinking, you know, the melody, what happens is, you know, you're in the car and the melody and the words come, and it was, I never took the easy way. And I thought, oh, well, that's such a lie because I'm so lazy. And then I thought, actually, at certain points in my life, I didn't cross a line. And, you know, one was in a relationship. The other was actually in my music career. So actually, there's one per verse. there's a verse given for each for each of those things where I in my love life and in my career I actually didn't manipulate people into doing things that I wanted them to do when I knew I didn't deserve it. So that was the but also, you know, it's sort of like, actually, because I didn't cross the line, don't coach me all over the place about how I shouldn't cross the line and I need to, you know, hold up a certain moral blah blah blah, because I've done it already. So let me just sit and, you know, get my bearings before I have to go out and be brave again. So that was kind of the gist of the song.
But I think that, you know, you're hitting on a really important thing that happens in relationships is drawing lines and is kind of,
oh yeah,
you know, sometimes not taking the easy way, and you know, what is the easy way? Some people don't even realize that there's maybe a harder, better way of doing things. So it's hard to, I mean, you aren't tossing out blame in any of this. It's just, you know, I perceive that there could have been an easier way, and I didn't take it because this was important to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of especially talking about that kind of vivid scene of a young man kind of being harassed by a previous girlfriend.
Right.
And really, obviously, that girl wasn't doing very well because she was going to be flat out on the floor.
Yeah, well, and she said she would do something terrible to herself if he didn't go back to her. And I remember losing about 20 pounds, and I'm a small person. But I was like, I'm not going to pull that card. I'm not going to be like, well, I'm going to do something terrible to myself if you go. I just said, if that's really what you, if that's going to be the basis of your relationship, go for it. I'll just, you know, hang out here and not eat for a summer or so. And it was, I think that was, I mean, of course I gave him probably a little bit of guilt, but that was a real relationship. And it really was my first love. We went out for 3 whole weeks and then he had to go back to his girlfriend with the cure hair. A friend of mine was staying with this guy recently, and I, you know, I know him now as an acquaintance, and I said, you know, this is about that guy. And he said, oh my goodness, really? And I was like, doesn't the world know? But it was, you know, all's well that ends well. And they broke up pretty soon after that anyway. Ha ha ha.
Dar Williams is my guest this morning, and she's playing tonight at the Gravity Lounge. So you've written a couple books, Amelie, and kind of is it a sequel to that? Because it has Amelie's name in it.
Yes. In the first book, she's 11, and I just wanted to do a kind of a 70s book. You know, there's this new way, or I guess it's a new thing, too. People who hang out with their parents' friends, you know, parents' friends and aunts and uncles who weigh in on your life. Like, I see that happening a lot more. Like, I'm really involved. I'm staying with my friend Kate, and I'm picking up her kids and throwing them around. She's picking up my son and throwing him around. And we're all, you know, people, I wanted to show a world like that, but I also, so she's 11 in one book, and then the next one she's 12. And that world of adults weighs in even more heavily when she's 12, because now she sort of trusts them and she confides in them a little bit more. It's kind of like a fantasy world where, you know, 12-year-olds want to talk to us.
So, you know, you get married, you have a son, and you're an author. How do you have time for all your different pursuits?
Right, yeah, I don't.
You
but
don't.
I just don't do them very well. That's really what I... No, I'm just kidding. It's actually it compartmentalizes really well. It's very... when you're on the road, you know, you kind of have to figure out how to take care of yourself in every little city. And when you're a parent, you have to kind of play it by ear every day with your kids. Being on the road, I think my tour manager will tell you, being on the road with my husband and my kiddo is a little much. That's a big footprint. But, you know, it used to be like when my son was born, I would drop him off at the babysitter. I would go to the cafe. I would write for an hour and a half, have my hot chocolate, go to the Stop and Shop, pick him up, go home. You know, it actually made my life better to have, my son was my organizing principle. That's what I think. That's you call it. Because it used to be I'd wake up and I'd say, what am I going to do with this whole day? And then it was suddenly over. That's how it felt. It just felt very airy and open, and window shopping and long coffees and things and, you know, phone calls about dramas that I'd made up out of nothing. With my son, the dramas are very concrete, and same goes for my marriage and my house and even creative stuff, you know. It's sort of I have to make time to do these things, so my creative problems are, you know, take up a space just like any other thing, you know.
Well, is there a new book ready to come? I mean, you had, you know, 04, 06, now
right.
It's 08, so.
No, she's, you know, then she would have to be 13 in this next book, and I don't want to deal with, you know, 13-year-olds think about sex, drugs, or rock and roll, and I don't want to get the angry letters from the parents. I would go right in there, but I just don't want to, I don't want to be a Judy Blume person, so she's going to be forever 12.
Well, is there another character for you to take on?
Maybe there's. I'm. You know, the thing is, I work on a bunch of stuff, and I show it to people. But you know, I it's mostly music that I do, but I do a lot of other kind of writing, and I show it to people, and sometimes they say, you know, really, you shouldn't show this to any other person at all. And it's fine. I mean, it's my, so I do, you know, I write little plays and I write little books and things like that. And I show them around and then I go back to the music. So it's just something to keep my brain feeling balanced. But the Amelie thing, Scholastic invited me to do. So I did that for them. And I go to schools and I talk about it, about Amelie and about writing books and writing songs and touring and stuff. And, That keeps me busy enough.
Dar Williams is my guest this morning, and she's playing tonight at the Gravity Lounge. We're talking a bit about the new album, Promised Land, as well as a couple of books that she's written over the last couple of years. How about another tune from this new album? Your choice.
All right. Can I do a really quiet one, a real folky one?
Oh, sure.
Okay, this is... This is a friend of mine said that she was that she heard that the witch hunts were inspired by a need for, or trying to get women off the land for their real estate, and it just creeped me out. And so I created this whole story. And then I also, you know, got on the computer and found out that they had made herbs illegal during various witch hunt times in Europe and the United States. You know, the use of medicinal herbs. And it just seemed like a time of incredibly condensed power abuse. So anyway, so that made it into, this is called Holly Tree. When the robin built in the holly tree, it's a sign of life, it's gentle victory. Well, today as I set to go, I saw a nest in a tree hollow. Oh, Emily, you're a brave girl, with your husband gone to the other world. Sing a hymn while I light the fire, we'll be joined by heavenly choir. Here's the tansy and the chamomile tea for you to drink. As the pain increases, oh, you only have to think about a baby. We'll save the baby. I placed holly sprig by the doctor's door. He has done this well and many times before. He'll be careful which way he goes, but he's been kind to us farm widows. And this I heard just the other day, that they came to buy and you chose to stay. Soon a child will help you reap and sow. May he cast a long shadow, but you say the trials are coming. You have felt the gathering forces, and the galloping you hear is of one too many horses. But rest your head, my darling girl, there won't be any danger. Any Christian ever loved an infant in a manger saves the baby. They'll save the baby. Now the pastor comes, shakes the farmer's hand, says the earth will bear like the promised land. You have heard the stories down below, but God will bless this farm hollow. Now the farmer's wife shudders, pulls the shawl up to her shoulder. Every time she nears the hearth, she feels a little colder. Where's the baby? There was a baby.
WNRN. My guest this morning is Dar Williams, talking about the album Promised Land, came out in September. She's playing tonight at the Gravity Lounge. Also, Lucy Wainwright Roach is opening. Are you doing a lot of dates with Lucy?
Just three this time around, but we've done some dates together. She was our nanny for a summer. So I'm very close to Lucy. I always have been.
So I see that your schedule, you're doing kind of like 3 days in a row out on the road. So you leave Stephen, your son, you know, behind as you go on this, or do you still bring him along?
These are the last 3 dates of a 4-week tour. So we started in Boulder and we're ending here and at the Birchmere. And so we're, Stephen came out to California with my husband. They flew out, and we did a lot of driving and on our own, because I did something. There's a show called Mad Men, And there was a show, a review of music by the cast members of Mad Men, and we drove down to L.A. between, on a day off, so I could sing a Peter, Paul, and Mary song for that. And then we came back up from L.A., and I continued just being myself. And so it was kind of crazy, but, you know, you just need to get in your time, you know, hugging and squeezing. And then they left, and I did that sort of Southwest Texas thing with the band, and then we came swinging up here, and I just met with them yesterday. So you got to do a lot of improvising. And I said to him, you know, maybe I should take you on the road more. And he goes, yeah, because I don't like school that much. He's 4. So we're off to a good start. But I also think he needs his, you know, the Brussels sprouts came in the garden. He's actually eating some Brussels sprouts, a few. You know, like, it's kind of nice to keep him in the place where he's actually eating vegetables and going to school. And I'm not there, but everything else is.
Well, that's cool. I want to talk a little bit about your foundation that you put together. This is the Snowden Foundation.
I haven't sort of found my next trapeze yet.
Okay.
So I'm sort of between trapezes in terms of philanthropic thing. I either want to do something where I'm doing fundraising for local food things, community gardens and things like that, or helping schools and libraries put solar panels on. So I'm sort of trying to decide, because I've gone through kind of different incarnations of different ways that I try to get involved, you know, share the microphone, as it were. The Snowden thing was a while ago for doing sort of very small scale, low paperwork, saving a little edge of land around a pond kind of things, you know, for small towns that didn't want to go necessarily to like the Nature Conservancy. And that worked for a while. And that was just like the slush fund of all of the posters that we would send to people. Like, we had all these extra posters and promotional things from the record company that we were too lazy to send them out just for free, but we also didn't really want to take money for them. And so we decided to do this. And people were so cool, and they jumped on board and found other ways of fundraising for it. And we ended up doing a lot in sort of Vermont and Massachusetts with that.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming in this morning. We're going to go ahead and give away a pair of tickets to tonight's show featuring Dar Williams and Lucy Wainwright Roach. And many happy returns to Charlottesville, Dar.
So nice to be here.